Dave Ross on News Talk 97.3, Cairo FM.
Where Seattle stays in touch.
I'm Paul Harris, filling in for Dave. Thank you very much for listening. Last Thursday, the U.S. Senate voted and passed their version of the health care reform bill. Once both houses of Congress come back from their three-week winter break, they will sit down in conference committee and try to hammer out what the health care reform package that will go to the president's desk will look like. There have been a lot of people chiming in on this, but today I've invited Wendell Potter back onto the show to talk a little bit more about it. I spoke to Wendell several months ago when he joined up with a group called the Center for Media and Democracy. This after a two-decade-long career as a corporate public relations executive. He used to work in the health insurance industry, trying to tell the world how great those companies were. But he left his job as head of communications for one of the nation's largest health insurers to try his hand at helping out on the other side and advocating for meaningful health care reform. Wendell, welcome back to News Talk 97.3 Cairo FM.
Thanks, Paul. Good to be back.
Good to have you here. Are you happy with what passed the Senate last week?
No, I'm not. I'm happy that something passed because we needed to get that done because otherwise we would have no legislation at all. What's happening now is, of course, that the ball is kind of back in the court of the House of Representatives, which will have to take a look at what the Senate has done. Then the Senate and House leaders will meet to try to blend the two bills, and I'm hopeful come up with a far better bill than the Senate passed.
What is it that you don't like in the Senate version?
Well, among other things, it doesn't include a public option. We may not have a bill that does include a public option because even the one in the House version was watered down to the point that it was not as robust, as they say, as it was when it was initially proposed. The Senate version doesn't cover as many people. In other words, it doesn't bring as many people from the uninsured into coverage as the House bill does. It proposes to tax what the Senate bill refers to as high-end or Cadillac plans, health plans that some employers offer, which I think is a very bad way of raising revenue to pay for some of the elements of this legislation. The House version, on the other hand, would impose a tax on the very wealthiest among us, like the top 1% would pay a percentage of income over a certain level, which I think is a much better way to pay for it than that. So there's some very significant differences between the two bills, and the House bill also would generate more savings over time. It would bring more people into coverage.
As you say, the Senate version does not include the public option, although there is one in some form in the House version. The Senate just doesn't have the numbers. The Democrats can't get together enough senators to pass it the way they want because they've got quite a few conservative Democrats who just won't go along. So do you settle for the best you can do, or do you say, you know what, don't pass this at all?
You know what, I think that we need to see where this, how this plays out. Rather than saying let's settle at this point, I do think that the House leadership can make a good case for including a version of the public plan in the legislation, but if it looks like it just will not pass the Senate at all with it, then I think we need to take a look at, well, what does this final bill look like that the conferees can come up with that doesn't include a public option? And I think we then can take then we can form some opinions of it more than we can today because we don't know what that might look like. There are some very good elements of both bills that will bring much-needed change to the healthcare system. So I'm eager to see what they come up with. It'll be weeks now before we know exactly what it will look like. I think they'll be returning to Congress fairly soon and taking this up again, but it will be after the new year before we know what the conference report will look like.
Wendell, what does it say that 8 days ago, last Monday, the Monday before Christmas, which was the day after the Senate had their historic vote on this and the Democrats were able to hold their coalition of 60 together, that the very next day, that Monday, health insurance stocks went up 5% and pharmaceutical company stocks were up 2.5% to 3%?
You know, put that into context, because since the president had his healthcare summit at the White House on March the 5th. That was the date that at least Cigna stock, where I used to work, its stock was the lowest it had been in a long time. It certainly was a 52-week low. And a lot of the other health insurance companies were also at or around their low point. Since then, investors have looked at what's going on in Congress, and they've become increasingly confident that the legislation will not really penalize these investor-owned companies. So it wasn't just the increase that occurred when the Senate voted. This is, it's been building up to this over the course of a long time. In fact, I've been monitoring this as the debate has gone on. And it's just a testament to the influence of the lobbyists, the army of lobbyists, the health insurance companies and the pharmaceutical companies have at their disposal, that they're able to buy using our dollars that we use to buy our medications and pay our premiums with. So it doesn't surprise me. It's disconcerting, and it points out just how powerful and influential the special interests are. And if we ever expect in this country to get the kind of fundamental change we need in things like our healthcare system, we will have to fundamentally change the way that Congress operates.
Two reporters from Bloomberg did a story a few days ago that said that the health insurance industry and related interests spent something like $600 million to sway Congress this year. Now, you work for an advocacy group that is trying to also have some sway in Congress. Can groups like yours, fighting on behalf of people like me and every other American citizen, ever hope to win against the mammoth amounts of money that these insurance companies have to spend to bribe, essentially, Congress?
Not until we have some of those changes that I said are so vitally important. We need to have campaign finance reform, because not only are these companies able to buy lobbyists and spend millions of dollars, as you noted, on lobbying, but over the course of the past several years, over the course of many years, they've been anticipating this, and they've been making investments in a lot of candidates that have run for public office and a lot of people who are in office to make sure that when this day came, that they would be lined up behind the insurance industry and the pharmaceutical companies. So, first of all, we need to have real campaign finance reform that makes it possible for average folks to have at least some possibility of making a difference. And the other is two other things. One is the lobbying reform. We need to make sure that there are some significant changes to how lobbyists operate. There have been some measures that have passed, but still not anything close to what we need. And then finally, we need to address the way the Senate conducts its business. As long as we have the Senate tied up in knots, as it has been, or at least requiring 60 votes to get any legislation that's significant through the Senate, we're not going to ever get the kind of reform that we need or the changes that we need. Senator Harkin of Iowa has said that he will reintroduce next month legislation that he proposed back in 1995 that would gradually change the filibuster rules in the Senate. That's vitally important. We need to make those changes. Once we have some of those changes, and it's where I think that a lot of Americans need to get themselves educated about and understand and get active into supporting these kinds of changes, then I think that average Americans can start seeing some fundamental changes in our society that we really need.
I can just hear the filibusters starting now against the filibuster rule change.
Oh, absolutely. It would have to be done in a certain way. I don't know exactly what Senator Harkin has in mind. So it would have to be something that would be pretty creative to get around the filibuster rule right now.
Absolutely. I've got to take a break, Wendell. Stand by. We'll come back and talk some more. Wendell Potter from the Center for Media and Democracy. You can read all about what he's up to by going to prwatch.org. This is the Dave Ross Show with Paul Harris on News Talk 97.3 Cairo FM. 10 to 11, Paul Harris filling in for Dave Ross, talking with Wendell Potter of the Center for Media and Democracy, a former insurance company executive. He was the top PR guy for Cigna for a long, long time, but he left the industry because I think your stomach was kind of being turned by some of the practices of your own industry, right, Wendell?
That's right. A lot of in different ways. One was the kinds of health insurance policies that the insurance companies are trying to move us all into, and they're making good progress at that, moving us into plans that have very high deductibles that force us to pay a lot more out of our own pocket before insurance coverage will kick in. That's their solution to containing health care costs, is just to have us make pay a lot more of the cost of health care, which sounds good on the face of it, but the reality is that the average household income in this country is just about $50,000, $51,000. And when you're having people pay a big chunk of their premiums, if not the whole freight of the premiums, plus have to pay a lot out of their own pockets, people just can't afford to get the care that they need. The other reason I decided to leave my job was I didn't want to be involved in another campaign to defeat or shape healthcare reform from the industry's perspective. And I'd done that many times in the past, and I just didn't have the stomach to do it again.
When we hear anything from opponents of healthcare reform or some of the politicians who voted against it, you ask them, well, what would you do? And the number one thing they always mention is, we've got to reform tort reform. We've got to fix the problem of medical malpractice suits in this country because it's destroying too many doctors. Do you buy that argument at all?
No, and here's why. It's a red herring, and I know it because the insurance companies made it that. I've been involved in efforts in years past to do exactly what they've been able to accomplish, and that is to make people believe that if we reform the tort system, if we eliminate lawsuit abuse, as they often say, then problem solved. That's just not true. Even the states that have addressed tort reform and have done so in ways that really severely limit the amount of money that people can get in a jury verdict if they've been really harmed by a doctor or a hospital or even an insurance company, it hasn't had a significant impact, if any impact at all, on rising health care costs. In fact, the evidence is that it really hasn't made a difference. But it is a favorite topic of the opponents of reform, and it's been made a favorite by the way that health insurance companies have been able to manipulate public opinion. That's one of the reasons that I walked away from the industry.
What do you think of the notion of the mandate, requiring Americans to have coverage or they'll be fined? Aren't we just, by doing that, creating 30 million new customers for the insurance industry?
The mandate does deliver a lot of new customers to the insurance industry, and I don't like that. In fact, when the president was campaigning, he campaigned in favor of a public option, and the thing that distinguished his campaign or his platform from Hillary Clinton's and John Edwards and the other candidates was that he did not embrace an individual mandate. He said at the time that why should we force people to buy a product that they can't afford? And he's changed his opinion on that and is endorsing an individual mandate. I think he seems to be satisfied that the legislation can restructure and regulate the insurance industry in ways that it hasn't been before, and that's true. But I'm concerned about the individual mandate because it will indeed enable the insurance companies to continue their business models, which otherwise wouldn't be sustainable because it just can't keep shifting more and more of the costs to consumers. It'll keep them in business, and they'll earn billions of dollars in profits over the years as a consequence of this because of the revenue that the government will force into their coffers by making us all buy insurance and through the subsidies that the government will pay the insurance companies to pay for those policies of people who can't afford to pay the premiums themselves. So it will really be a significant boon for the insurance companies. There's no doubt about it. On the other hand, the option is even worse, and that is to leave more people uncovered.
Great points. Wendell, it's always a pleasure talking to you. I hope we can do it again once we see what the final form of the bill turns out to be after the conference committee gets done with that and before it goes to the president's desk for his signature. I appreciate your time today.
Glad to do it. Thank you, Paul. Take care.
Wendell Potter from the Center for Media and Democracy. You can read his blog at prwatch.org. There's a guy who was inside the belly of the beast for several years, realized that the beast was terribly distasteful, and so now he's fighting against that beast from the outside, and good for him for doing that. I'm Paul Harris. I'm going to leave you an hour earlier today in the hands of Frank Shires. Back tomorrow morning at 9 for the Dave Ross Show on Cairo FM.